Hello and welcome to From the Rookery End, live from the Hemel Dome, the Storm Dome. Mike and I are watching the Hemel Storm take on the Loughborough Raiders. Not at Bristol today, but DCW and Collingwood, Ashton Gate today.
Just walking out of Ashton Gate now, full time, Bristol City 1, Watford 1. And who do I see but the Brigadier himself, Cole? What do you think? 1-1, decent point?
Yeah, it's a decent point. I'm really enjoying watching this team play, particularly away from home, like last weekend at QPR. This game was in the balance, and I thought, okay, we had a bit of man scrambling off the line at the end there, but most of the second half, I thought they were trying to contain us and we were trying to break through their lines and score. And we didn't really have any clear chances, but we just look at it. You know, we're fun to watch. We get it wide. People are moving around. There's just a bit of ambition. And again, you know, compare this to the way they thumped us, 3 weeks ago, to come here away from home and get this creditable draw. It's just unfortunate. You know, we should have been 1-0 up, not 1-1, because we gave them a goal. We did it again. He fell over. He made a mistake about 5 minutes before. Then he had made a big mistake. Hamer does his best, gets his foot to it, clears it, but the lad heads it in. And it's like, we've got to stop giving away goals like that. It's really frustrating. In fact, I was standing next to my friend David and I was saying, I just want to see Porteous play for 90 minutes and not make a mistake. And boom. It's like, okay. So I slightly question why.
So you jinxed it?
I jinxed it, I'm afraid to say. It's my fault, everybody. Sorry. I don't quite know why he took Sorrell out of the line, because he didn't have a bad game against QPR. He doesn't do much, but he's kind of reliable. He doesn't chuck himself in. And Porteous was disappearing over the hills at times, like over the halfway line. He's like, you're a centre-half. What happens if we lose the ball? Then what happens? You're miles out of position and Livermore has to come back. Then we've got a big hole in midfield, so they've got players in there pinging the ball between each other. It's just, he just hasn't got his head's not right. I just don't think he's a centre-half good enough to play in the top 10 of the Championship. I think he's unreliable, and when he gets it, I'm like, oh, you know. So I don't want to single out Porteous. It's not really fair, but without his mistake, we probably would have come away with 3 points.
Yeah, I think possibly. I think, as you say, you're right to point out the fact that we were beaten, and well beaten, 4-1 on Boxing Day by Bristol City. So we clearly recognised what they were doing in that match. I think Val's probably been wise to them, and we were better today than we were against them in that match. And I think, yeah, 1-1 in the balance is probably a good point for us. I felt that in the second half, even though Hamer's had to make two or three really good saves, and there was a bit of a scramble a few times there, they were causing us a few issues from set pieces from those corners.
Yeah.
But they didn't really create anything from open play.
Not really.
Whereas we got in good areas, as we so often do. We got in good areas, down the wings, in the middle of the pitch. We had good possession in and around the box. But we just struggle continually to make big chances. Yeah. We get in good positions, but we don't threaten the goalkeeper enough, we don't shoot enough, and we make one or two extra passes, and we just don't have that cutting edge. And if we did, I think we'd probably win that game today.
I agree. We're crying out for a finisher, really, aren't we? Someone who can organise that front line and know what to do and how to get into positions to, as you say, create big chances, not these kind of quarter chances that we're creating, speculative shots or getting in there, then it's all a bit scrappy and it's at the feet, and you know, we had a few of those. But I do think that it's a resilient side, and the thing about our team at the moment, it never gets leggy. It always the team as a whole, including the substitutes, we really play quite hard right through to the 93rd, 94th minute. I thought Bristol, apart from that last little few minutes, second half they were just, as I say, trying to contain us, trying to hold us off, and then they did start to look a bit slow, and we were pulling them all over the place. Martins came on at half time and I thought he made a difference. He started to play quite well down the right, and I have to say, the two players that I thought stood out for me today, you might not agree with me, but, or you might have others that you like the look of, but I thought Chak Fatanzi playing out on the left, linking up with Andrews, I thought that worked quite well, and the lad's got ambition. He loves to run forward with the ball. He loves to be progressive. He doesn't like get it, put his foot on it, turn around. He just wants to get it and go. And Andrews is the same. So we had quite a lot of success down that left-hand flank with him. And I also thought Kone made a difference to our midfield. I thought he's creative, he's good on the ball. He's looking for a forward pass if he can find one and get people into passing into space. And that was the other thing I really noticed today, which is not something we do very much, I think. Often we play into feet. We play the pass into the person's feet. Today, we were playing the ball into space and letting players run onto it. And that excites the crowd, obviously. You see Martins, you know, the ball comes between two defenders and Martins is haring down it, trying to get there before them. And it excites the crowd and it does scare defences. Players get pulled out of position. And they did look a little bit wobbly at times, Bristol City, at the back. But as you say, their set pieces were so much better than ours. And, you know, I think we were fortunate in some ways not to concede a goal from one.
Talking of set pieces, I don't think you can call a penalty a set piece necessarily. But we did get a penalty today for the first time since last season.
We've got a pen.
The last pen we got was home to Blackpool last season. In the game where Eddie Amey scored the first goal, and then Saar got the penalty, to make it 2-0 in that game. So we get the pen in the first half, and who steps up? But number 24, Tom Dellibashiru. And I think we're all looking around going, oh, hello. Is he? I mean, because the thing is, it's been so long since we've had a pen. I'm thinking, who's the pen? Who's the pen taker? I don't know who it is.
I thought Spreer would take it. Or I knew Rajovic wouldn't take it. He wandered over and they were like, no.
You can't take penalties with your head, Cole.
No, you can't. And it's not his office. So I would say the rehabilitation of Tom Dellibashiru is complete because he took it. He stepped up. Not an easy thing to do. I don't know how many pens he's taken professionally, but schooled in the Man City Academy, so presumably technique quite good, and put it away. Keeper went the right way, but he just put it high enough, slotted it. He does take that short run up. Oh, God, it makes your heart just sort of stop beating.
That's the way. That's the modern way. Two steps, bang. And it was a good pen, and we went 1-0 up. But I suppose, you know, the only other kind of big chance that we did have came towards the end of the first half. And as you've just said, Shaq Fetadze, I thought you're right, he did have a good game. And he created a good chance for us in the end of the first half when he sort of played that ball across the front of the defence, comes to Espria, and you're just begging him to hit it first time. Mm. The thing is, you know that he's got the skill to take it down and shift it, like he did in that game against Norwich, and he got the winner for us. But he tried to do the same thing again. He tried to take it in and roll it past the keeper, but the keeper was wise to it, and look, he missed it on that occasion. But you think if he hits that first time, it was on his left foot as well, back where it came from, and then he goes off at half time. But really, that's really our biggest chance in terms of the ball at someone's feet in the penalty area.
Yeah, and he could also have rolled it back across to Rajovic, who was arriving. And I thought that Shaq Fetadze was trying to find Rajovic, but actually, when I watched it on the screen after the chance had been missed, the pass to Espria was a good pass. It was quite strong. So, you know, you've got to time it if you're going to hit it first time. It wasn't rolled to him. It was hit quite hard. But it was a decent pass right into his path. And as you say, he thought, oh, I'll just bring that down and then roll it in. But it didn't happen this time. But he could maybe have just popped it back across and either Shaq Fetadze or Rajovic would have had another chance to shoot. It was our biggest other chance, without a doubt. We got a pen for a handball from a free kick. So I didn't, you know, it's a very long way away at my age, I can't see. But clearly the lad jumped and tried to head it, and he obviously had his hands above his head, and he gave it straight away, no hesitation. So, yeah, a pen. I mean, it's a collector's item this season, isn't it?
Indeed it was. And I suppose the only other thing to mention, I'm sure the guys are going to talk about this a little bit more after we've gone, but didn't have any striking options apart from Bio and Rajovic today because Healy has left the club. Yeah. Good business, I think. 2 million or there or thereabouts, leaving to Huddersfield. But we really could do with another striker. And I think that display today just underlined the fact is that we just have an opportunity now to try and find someone who can put the ball in the net for us in open play, not just from crosses with his head, just, you know, be a better option up front for us.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think that when you have a good goal scorer, a natural goal scorer at a club, in training, the natural goal scorer is telling the wide players and the midfield what he needs them to do. He's in charge of this. He's the man who's got to score the goals. So he's going to be saying, when you get it there, I want it here, or I want it behind there. And, you know, they can actually drill that sort of thing. And at the moment, when we get it out wide, they're looking up like, who is it? Who am I getting it to? And they don't really have a plan. Like, is it a ball to the back stick? Is it rolled along the ground to the penalty spot? Who's the player saying, this is where I'm going to pull back when you get there, I'll be here, pass it to me. You know, that sort of drilling that you do in training, and we haven't got a natural goal scorer, so that's probably not happening in training. And you can sort of see it on the pitch. Martins was interesting, though. He ostensibly was playing on the right wing, but he would drift inside into a central position, and then when we won the ball, the fullback on the right or somewhere, he would then pull out wide. And the ball would come into the space round.
He got round a few times,
yeah,
didn't he?
He did. And I like that, because if he's in a central position and then goes out wide, he pulls players with him, which pulls players out of a central area, which is good. And he won some fouls, he won some corners, he kept the ball quite well. And he looked, it was the best I've seen him for a while. I thought he was at it.
I did feel a little bit sorry for Jake Livermore today. I didn't think he had his best game, to be honest. No. He was all right. Did what he does. Yeah. But he had a few moments where he kind of lost the ball, a few moments. But literally, every time he got the ball at his feet, regardless of whether he was near the penalty... exactly. Regardless of where he was, you knew it was going to come. And he didn't really have the chance to shoot today. But I bet he was thinking as he went onto that pitch, God, bloody hell, I know what I'm going to get today.
Yeah, he's made a rub for his own back. But, you know, he won us a game, won us 3 points. So, yeah, I don't think he can complain, really. Fans love that. They love that. You know, we haven't had a player that we do that to for a while, so it was good fun. And a massive turnout. You know, you can see that the relationship between the team, the players, the coach and the supporters is really starting to hum along. You know, we sang for 90 minutes, we were loud, supported the team responding to us. You know, when they've got little moments, when we get a corner, they're going, come on, you know, give us a bit more. And I'm really loving that we brought, I don't know how many it was, but it's probably around about 2,000 people here. And, you know, it's a cold January afternoon, but here we are. And it's because the team are giving us something to support, giving us something to excite us. You know, we've lost 3 games in 18. Two of those losses were against the top two. I mean, this is a team that doesn't lose very much. And the last time we lost was against this lot, and we've come down here and got a draw.
Indeed. Southampton in the Cup next week, next Sunday, and then after that, the next league game, away to Sheffield Wednesday on a Wednesday night at the end of January. You'll be there, won't you, Carl?
I will. I've made the decision that I'm definitely going to go. I'm going to drive up around about 3 p.m. I haven't been to Hillsborough for so long, but I'm really looking forward to it. And I've got my friend Oliver is going to come with his son, I think. So that'll be a decent trip out. And a midweek game away from home under the lights is a bit special.
Lovely stuff. Well, as for this evening, I've got to go and meet my Bristolian compatriots in the pub down the road. You've got to go to meet your missus
in
Bath, not the Bath, in Bath, for a romantic evening in Bath.
You know.
We'll see how it goes. Yeah. But lads, over to you.
To 72, a win for the Hemel Storm last night. Mike's a day after Watford 1-1, and we just heard there from Colin and from DCW. But it was great being in the Storm Dome to be doing some announcing of the game as we were, but also to see what was a professional basketball team getting ahead and keeping the opposition at arm's length.
Yeah, they kind of did what Watford weren't quite able to do. So, yeah, well done to Hemel Storm. First home game of 2024 at the Storm Dome. What I would do is, if you are local and you're looking for something fun to do on a Saturday or Sunday evening, if you've got family, do consider coming along, because it really is a tremendous evening's entertainment. They're a really, really good side. Lots of characters. It won't be me on the mic more often than not, so you don't have to worry about listening to my ridiculous nasal tones being amplified and echoing across the Storm Dome. It's a really good fun night out. So do run by volunteers. Very much community vibe. It's got lots of sort of Watford type goodness around it, I think. So if you're a big sports fan and you're in the area, do consider going along. But yeah, Storm got it done. Watford couldn't quite get it done, but hearing from Colin and DCW there, I think I'm chiming with them. It's hard not to be too disappointed. Hard not to be too disappointed. Hard to be too disappointed, despite really Watford looking, in big parts, the better side, I think. I think it's summed up really where Watford are for me. I think they are hugely growing in confidence. They're definitely more impactful as a unit. You can see individuals growing in confidence and stature, and they're fun to watch. But I think they've still got a massive frailty defensively. The chaps talked about Ryan Porteous and his obvious failings. Really, he's great fun in a lot of ways, but also he's just kamikaze sometimes, isn't he? And I think he struggles. So I think there's probably a question for Valerian Ismail there. And I think the other thing, John, is at the other end. I think we overplay a little bit. And the chaps alluded to it. We do the hard work, and then we sort of fluff our lines a little bit in the final third, where we were looking for that extra pass, that extra ball to get that perfect shot on goal or that perfect pass through. When really, as we saw at QPR, Jake Livermore took the shots and he scored. And I think overall, the game at Ashton Gate summed up where we are. Good to watch a team that we can very, very much get behind, improving, but failures in sort of in key areas. But I think we can see improvement. We can see us moving forward, and it's an enjoyable watch in the main.
Yeah, because, you know, we are sort of 10 days away from the transfer window closing, and we've seen a couple of exits. Firstly, notably, I suppose, was Imran Lusa going away on loan, but also Reece Healy, a permanent move to Huddersfield Town. I think what's fascinating, I think, for me is, you know, and I think it really goes down to what we've sort of said about what you said, you know, hints towards what you said with how the team is and how the team is acting and getting better together, because a team is better than a bunch of individuals. You know, one player leaving there because they clearly didn't fit in and they were causing, well, we know that there were definitely some run-ins, and one leaving because they felt, no, that's right, you know, you do need to move to, you know, Loser's the one, by the way, if you don't know, Loser's the one who caused the problems. But the fact that the club sort of allowed, for the right reasons, for him and for them, that the Reece Healy move was made. And it just sort of, those, you know, this time of year when people leave, it's always like, oh, is it for good or for bad reasons? It's quite nice that actually both of them are for the right team reasons. So the team isn't full of a bad egg or someone who's going to be frustrated.
Yeah, I mean, Watford and Imran Lusa had very, very clearly fallen out of love, hadn't we? And then what was it that Chris Martin and Gwyneth Paltrow had?
A conscious
uncoupling or something like that. It always makes me think of that they sound like Thomas the Tank Engine or something. It was the least surprising bit of transfer news, I think, that we've had as Watford supporters for quite some time with Imran Lusa going. He obviously wasn't fitting into the squad. He obviously wasn't fitting into Valerian Ismail's plans on the pitch. And like you say, John, off it either. I don't think when Valerian Ismail says he wants a small, tight-knit squad, he's just paying lip service there. I think he firmly believes that. And I think that's why we're seeing what we've seen. And when I talk about the team being a unit and improving together and being more lovable, that comes from that. That comes from, you know, we talk about how leadership impacts what happens. And I think that's Valerian Ismail's squad. And that's how they play. So Imran Lusa going, it's absolutely fine, I think, isn't it? It's a shame because obviously there is talent there. Whether we ever saw the best of it, he did struggle with those injuries, of course, and they came in inopportune times. His sort of flame burned bright, but all too infrequently, didn't it? So wish him well. I suspect that's the last time we'll see him in a yellow shirt, done and dusted. As for Reece Healy, credit to Valerian Ismail and indeed the club. They put out a pretty comprehensive explanation as to why Reece Healy was going to move on, and they made it clear that Reece Healy himself had said he wanted game time, which we all know he wasn't getting and probably wasn't going to get. It didn't really fit in to the way Valerian Ismail plays football, so him going, I think it was a surprise. I didn't expect him to go, but then when it was announced, you sort of sit down and you think about it, goes, well, actually, you know, that makes sense. There's a couple of quid coming back. It's probably a million plus whatever add-ons. And it gives him a chance to go and play some football. I think he's someone who he's full of. I think he's probably lost a bit of pace because of his injury. The best look we had at him was at QPR, where he did find it difficult, as we spoke about last week. I think the surface didn't necessarily help. The service didn't necessarily help. But what we saw is that he's a willing runner, and he's not going to be found wanting for effort. But has he got that touch of pace, class, brilliance that we're needing to unlock defences? I very much doubt it. So the key thing there is obviously wish him well. Watford have turned a profit, which is presumably handy in the current climate. Wish him well, but you'd like to think that Watford have got a replacement lined up, because as I think Dave and the Brigadier alluded to outside Ashton Gate, our striking options are limited as they are, even with Healy, Bayo and Rajovic. They've all got something in their locker, but none of them are the finished article. So
no.
For us to be down to two senior strikers, I'd be flabbergasted if that was the plan. But I do think whoever does come in is going to be an indication as to where we're at, what the plan is, what money we've got, what ambition there is, and how much focus there is on potentially improving the team and maybe making a bid for the playoffs. I think the replacements for those two players, a striker which is in a key part of the pitch, and a senior player in Imran Lusa, one of the, at the start of the season, you'd have argued our, if not the best player in the squad, has gone. So we're missing a big talent, and we're missing a body up front. So it's going to be really fascinating to see what they're able to do to bring in terms of replacements.
And they, you know, you definitely feel that they must have. I mean, it'd be.
John, we know how this lot works.
We but think about it. It's, you know, they always say the phrases are one in, one out. Well, this is one out, one in. It, you know, we know where the club is at. We know, you know, Scott clearly at the fans forum and the event with Gino, you know, he said we will be debt free by the end of the season. So this is not going to be a mass investment thing. And, you know, grabbing some money from Reese. Is it grabbing, or is it taking the opportunity that's there? Who knows?
I do think it's the latter, John. I think
then look at it in terms of that. Then we know they're not that bad at bringing in players. They have got that nous, and you know it must be that there's other players ready to come in.
I think unless, there's plenty, John, me included.
But here's my question.
Their transfer nous.
But when you look at it, you know, the fact that if there isn't, though, which is where I wanted to get to, that tells you even more about the maybe where we need to sit with our expectations of this season, because we clearly see from the club's point of view where their expectations are, which is we're not pushing for playoffs. We'll be happy if it comes. That's the biggest thing I want out of these last 10 days of transfer window, is I want my expectations to be completely and utterly settled for the rest of the season, because it's, you know, well, you know, we're on the, yeah, not the end of the season, but it's you know, not the business end of the season quite yet. I don't want it though to be too harsh, and if they didn't bring anybody in, that just sort of says that we are really strapped for cash and we really want to sort this out. But I do still want a fun, like you said, we've said it's quite fun to watch at the moment. I want to continue to be fun, but maybe just at least a little bit funner.
I was a little bit tongue in cheek about their transfer record, but you know, they have had a lot of misses come in. There's been a lot thrown at the wall and not much has stuck. I think now we know that we're having to cut our cloth accordingly. We worked that out for ourselves in the summer, and the debt and coming down from the Premier League and so on. We've had to cut our cloth accordingly. But even I'd be flabbergasted, whatever the stated aims publicly or privately, if they're going into the rest of the season with two senior strikers, I would be absolutely amazed. I think that the fascinating thing for me about this January transfer window is, and I don't know whether it's got anything to do with AFCON, whether it's got anything to do with the rumblings about FFP in the Premier League and the sort of the authorities starting to throw their weight around in terms of finances. But the movement does seem to be exceptionally limited. I mean, granted, I'm not glued to Sky Sports News 24 hours a day these days. But it does feel like the wheels in this January transfer window are moving very, very slowly. And that might work in our favour in as much as if we have got a couple of million or some money to go into the market to find a striker and others aren't, then that might be helpful. But they're definitely going to have to earn their corn if it's Gianluca Nani or whatever the team is that's working on bringing this striker in. They're going to have to prove themselves to us, I think, as supporters. Because as you say, John, what happens in this January transfer window won't define it at this stage. Even if we got an amazing striker, it doesn't mean that it's linear and we'll go on and do well. But like you say, as supporters, we've really enjoyed up until this point, and yes, there have been divots in the road. There have been sort of what they call potholes in the road, and Leeds away, Sunderland away. There's been some poor performances along the way. But as a piece, we've gradually sort of building up a bit of head of steam. And you're right, John. For if they didn't allow that to continue, that would be disappointing. So I get what you mean in terms of getting January over and done with, and then we can at least sort of assess and go into it and hope to enjoy it in a similar way. But I'd like to see them try and go back to a little bit of that more creative transfer strategy of just trying to get in someone that from perhaps a different market, or whether we're looking at trying to cultivate a decent relationship with a Premier League club in terms of getting a loanee in. Because I think Valerian Ismail has now been at the club for a long time in Watford speak, and perhaps Premier League clubs who might not have been willing to entrust a youngster or someone they're looking to get more game time to a club like Watford, where the head coach might change, the style of play might change, and their player might not get a look in. Whereas now, I think Watford, which is great to say, are a much more stable for now. We're talking in our WhatsApp group about jinxing it, don't we? And that's why Colin mentioned, and DCW mentioned the jinx. I don't want to jinx it, but Watford for now are quite a stable proposition. A head coach that the fans are on board with, the board are seemingly happy with, the players are playing for. So perhaps, hopefully, we can cultivate a relationship and maybe get a clever loan in or two. But they have to deliver for us, really, I think. I think because Colin mentioned it as well. I think it was 2,600, by the way, Col, that were there yesterday, just to tickle over that in terms of the away attendance. That feeling is back of us being really on board with the club and the team. The supporters are wanting to be at matches. Supporters are wanting to get there and make noise and get behind them. And that feeling that we've missed, really, for quite a significant period of time, and a lot of people have spoken about it, is gradually coming back. And that it is very tangible. And that little sort of frisson of, right, we're in this together, loving going to Vicarage Road, people are loving going away with Watford. The away attendances, like I mentioned, are big. So we want that to continue. And that's they've got a job of work on to allow us to do that. It's over to them, John.
Yeah, that's the important bit, I suppose. The promotion and playoffs is... Not that it's not important, it's almost like the cherry on the cake, where you cannot lose this momentum with the fans and the fun. That is the most important from this season. And to not go down, but I just looked at the points. 40 points, Mike, which means we are only 12 points away from the Malky Mackay 52 points. If you remember, he barked on about it. And he's right, of course, it's the average, so at least you stay up. But let's get there and then let's really have some fun. But some sort of player who can... Big player. It's got to be a big player, hasn't it? One who can at least play up front on his own, like we're playing at the moment, because it's a little fellow who's a bit quick, is not going to do anything, and
yeah,
is going to be third choice. We need someone who's pushing, and we need someone who's going to be there and not to say definitely 100% first choice, but a very clear backup.
I think that's a really good point, John, because it goes back to what I'm saying about Valerian Ismail. He's in position, and unless something goes, I am really risking the jinx here.
Jinx, jinx, go on.
He's going to be there, hopefully, until the end of the season. And I think what we've done in the past, what Watford have done is brought in players that haven't necessarily been a good fit for the head coach and how he plays. So I think your point's a very, very good one there, John. It has to be the right player. A body isn't going to cut it, because Reece Healy was a body, and he lasted 6 months before being moved on, and himself being unhappy at the club. So it is a good point. The profile of the player has to be correct. That's not us saying get us a 20 goal a season, man. We're sensible enough to know that they don't grow on trees. It'd be nice if you can. Please, by all means, but the profile has to be correct. And I think as supporters, all too often we've just sort of been left scratching our head a little bit as to players have been brought in, because you don't see how they fit in with how the head coach is obviously playing. So yeah, I think it's a good point, John.
Yeah, the other news, and we'll see what happens to the transfer window. Still a couple of 10 days to go as we record this, so we'll see what happens and does anything interesting or anything more interesting after Reece Healy's exit happen. But two things in the news this week in the Watford news, Mike. One of them, let's go with the, are either of them any good? But let's see. News stories, accusations coming out of Spain about Juninho Pozzo and possibly, you know, facing trial over alleged tax fraud when he was in charge of Granada. And, you know, I look at those stories and I've read them before. And when I read them now, it seems like, well, you're not. There was no new smoking gun, let's say. There was no new information. It was old information that clearly hadn't stuck because the case was over. So we haven't heard anything sort of concrete that's going to really make you go, oh, this is going to happen. At least he's going to have quite a heavy distraction from his work here at Watford. But it continues, as we have talked about for a long time. The fact that Watford are associated with people who have bad press, and now the owner is having some bad press. It's not what we want, is it?
Yeah, I think you talk about a smoking gun, and I think, as far as I can tell, in these sort of cases where it's about fiscal transparency and tax and all that sort of stuff, I think there's very rarely a smoking gun, due to the nature of how these things are done. It's by design. Not saying this is what Juninho Pozzo is guilty of at all, of course, but by design, it's all opaque and very difficult to prove, because that's why people who evade tax, that's how they do it. So I think it's unlikely that there's going to be a sort of something that makes it very, very obvious that there's any guilt. In terms of the headline, very headline grabbing, and I think that's probably a technique of the prosecutor over there in Spain. Get a headline. We're seeking, I think, did they talk about 12 years they're asking for in prison, which is obviously the thing that everyone picks up on, and that's designed to focus eyeballs on the case, and presumably designed to put the wind up the defendant and maybe sort of usher them down the route of either complying or doing a deal or whatever. So a massive headline, as you say, John. No evidence of any wrongdoing as yet. So we'll watch, obviously, incredibly keenly how that plays out. But your point is an excellent one, John, about we've been critical about being linked with particular agents who have got repeated bad press and negative connotations around them. And we should feel no less concerned or disappointed in this instance. It's not the first time, if not fire, there has certainly been smoke around the Watford owner. And I think we've all been privy to enough over the years to be aware that there's a number of sort of question marks that have been raised over the term of the tenure. And quite frankly, as a Watford supporter, as a supporter of any club, you don't want your owner to be tangled up in these sort of headlines, in these sort of issues, because it's not a good look. Certainly not if like Watford, we continue to strive to be the family club, to do the community work, and to be to set standards in terms of sort of behaviour and that sort of stuff. Well, if the owner is being hauled through the courts, then that's difficult to square off. So you don't want that. And then from an operational point of view, like you mentioned there, John, how much of a distraction is it? Supposedly the January transfer window, how much time is being spent on potentially defending a court case instead of coming up with a January transfer strategy? Both are obviously important, but I know which one I'd prefer a football club to be focusing on. And also, is there, again, we don't know this, but is there a financial impact? So court cases, I'm told, are extremely expensive. Lawyers are extremely expensive.
I love that. Like that, Mike. Yeah, I've heard that court cases can be expensive. I've never been to court in my life.
What did you spend one of your mornings doing the other week, Mike, this week?
I didn't need a lawyer for the speed course, the speed awareness course that I went on this week. But was I to engage one? I think it would cost me. Look, yeah. All seriousness.
Yeah.
How much of a distraction is it for him? How much of a distraction is it for the football club? What are the financial implications? We've just skirted over 2, 3, 4 different points there that all point in one direction. We don't need it. We don't want it. We don't want this sort of stuff to be surrounding anyone involved in our football club, let alone the owner. And there will be obvious question marks that almost exactly the same time as this, the discussion about this court case came up, there was talk of a potential takeover. How realistic that is anyone's guess.
Those two things coming together are at this point are quite interesting, and I think we did learn this week about who this US multi-club group investors are going to be. And there's one thing I like about this fella, Peter Grieve is his name. And firstly, he's a former US Marine and Goldman Sachs managing director. I assume he was a Marine first and then moved into the financial services at Goldman Sachs. But this is going to be, so what I found clarifying my feelings towards it. This isn't one person with a bit of money saying, I want to try and own a football club. He is the lead on what is meant to be a huge multi-club investment, which Watford would be one of them. And all that sort of stuff. So it's quite interesting that this is coming up. Does it change you? We did talk about it before, and we know, neither of us are sort of fans of this, how most US takeovers have been done, which is takeovers of debt. And that, gives a whole other heap of problems, but different problems. Do you think this has changed your feelings at all towards it? The fact that you know who this person is and a little bit more about the group and, the grand plans that they have?
I think first and foremost, just to cover off Gino, I think personally, and this is, I've got no information, this is just my gut feeling, the ramblings of a middle-aged Watford supporter. I think if he could have sold the football club, he would have done by now. I think the club has been for sale for a little while, and if he could have got what he needs back from it, he would have done. That is my take on it. In terms of this latest sort of reported takeover, for me, to be perfectly honest, I just can't take it seriously. That it doesn't really stack up as something that is a going concern. I can't imagine that anyone is valuing Watford Football Club at 150 to 200 million quid. I just cannot see it. This guy has. They talk about this big multi-club model. Well, there aren't many clubs involved in it. There's been no real movement from it. It's the first many people have heard of this. Of this guy, there's already, I think, people popping up left, right and centre saying, well, they've heard his name in mooted takeovers before. And I think it's always the way. I think names, there is a sort of almost like a, never mind the managerial merry-go-round, there's a takeover merry-go-round of people who think they quite might like to take over a football club, and then these names pop up from time to time. For me, this one doesn't really stack up. Again, that's just my gut feeling. It doesn't feel like one that is going to proceed. May well be proved wrong. As with anything, it's the proof of the pudding will be in the eating. But what I would urge, we've always tried to do from the rookery end and as individuals, is be critical friends. We can't do anything about who Gino decides to sell to or who buys. We haven't got the money. Most people haven't got the money. So it will happen to us, really, is the reality. But that doesn't mean that we can't keep a really, really close eye on things and try and exert some scrutiny as Watford supporters and make sure that at least they know we're watching and that any potential new owners know they're not necessarily just going to get a easy ride. Similarly with Gino Pozzo, if he ends up in even more hot water, then we need to make it clear that that's not something that we're willing to be or want to be associated with. But until there's any sort of real firm movement, I think it's hard to comment. Like I say, this one just, it doesn't feel right to me. The American model of buying with debt that's loaded on the football club, I don't know how else, short of there being a local businessman made good with hundreds and hundreds of millions of pounds in the bank that he's willing to funnel into, or she is willing to funnel into Watford. What is the ownership model that is now open? If that's the sort of figures that are being bandied around, how do you buy a football club these days without that option? It's outside my wheelhouse, but it just feels like it's a big ask for someone to come in and make Watford financially sound and financially viable for anyone. But my big question is, why would anyone take over Watford? I don't mean that to be uber negative. I don't mean that to be critical of Watford. But if you've got that sort of money, why Watford? They've got a very, very definite ceiling on fan base, probably a ceiling, if we're being brutally honest, on what can be achieved in terms of where we can end up in the pyramid. So who's coming along with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of millions of pounds? And if you are, how are they mitigating the risk? And also, what is the potential in it for them? They're the sort of the big questions. That's the sort of thing that I would overlay it. So I think a takeover remains high on the agenda. I think it has been for some time. I just get the feeling that Gino wants out. But who comes in? How do they come in? And why do they come in? That's the question that we've got to keep our eyes on as supporters, I think.
We do. And like I said, lots of stories, nothing cemented and nothing really tangible at this point to emotionally insert ourselves into that narrative. But yeah, as Watford fans, it's always there, it's always part of our thoughts, and hey, we'll see what happens. A break from the league, is that needed next week, Michael, with this Southampton game? I know they are doing quite well at the top of the league. It might be a nice thing. They might say, oh, we're going to rest some players, we're really focusing on the league. They might, you never know. But I think I just want to see, I want to see more league at this point. It feels more like an interruption.
I think it takes the pressure off slightly. But what I just want to see us play again. I'm glad we're still in the FA Cup. The FA Cup is really important to me. The more games Watford play and I get to go and see, the better. Quite frankly, I bloody love it. I'd like us to go deep into the FA Cup. What are our chances of winning it? Minimal, I know, but who knows? There's fun to be had on the way. And as we always say, being a Watford supporter, being a football sport, needs to be fun. I think for Watford, we've spoken, there's been a bit of a common thread through this podcast and ones in the past about this team's togetherness and that momentum that they've managed to put together. They ground out the win against QPR. They hung in there at Bristol City to get another point, to keep that phenomenal away form going. And I think we need to keep going. So I think it's another opportunity for this team to continue to grow, bond, get to know each other, to carry on going. Southampton may well rest a few. They will definitely have one eye on the league and getting into that, cementing themselves in top two and getting a return to the Premier League. We've spoken about finance and costs and the implications of being outside the Premier League for a long time, while Southampton's target will be very, very, very clear. Premier League over FA Cup all day long. So I'd expect to see a few changes, but they'll be saying the same thing. They'll be saying we don't want to ruin the momentum we've built up. It's another opportunity against a Championship side for us to test ourselves. So I'm hopeful it'll be a decent game, and I'm really looking forward to it. But again, I don't expect to see too many changes. If there's new bodies that come in early in the week, perhaps that gives them an opportunity to experience a match day, to perhaps be on the bench and play a part. People who have been on the periphery, maybe Hurtado, who's been on the bench again yesterday, for him to maybe work towards coming up to speed and being a useful player for the rest of the season. We've really got to view it as an opportunity and not just waste it. And that isn't Valerian Ismail's MO at all. I think he'll take it seriously. I think we'll see a strong Watford side, and hopefully we'll see another big crowd at Vicarage Road like we saw at Chesterfield for it. Really looking forward to it.
But you never know, Mike. You never know. We might get a debut for a brand new big striker. No? Okay.
Yeah, I mean, like I say, it was, who knows? It's the FA Cup. We do love it. But I just want to just have that chat to see where it's fitting for us all. You're right. As long as the team keep their momentum going, forget if it's where that game comes from. I think it is good that it's a Championship side, because it's not going to, you know, ruffle things too much in mindset, which Chesterfield might have done a little bit, or if it was a Premier League side. But this is, yeah, it's a bit more in our wheelhouse. So that's good. Thank you very much, Michael.
Not at all. Thank you, John.
Thank you to DCW. Thank you to Colin for their post-match from Bristol chat. I hope you all had a safe trip home. And we'll be back again with more podcasts. Hopefully a few more other podcasts. We've got some plans. For some new ideas and some new things that we're going to be doing. Some more of that in the next couple of weeks. And we'll be back with more Watford chat on From the Rook End very soon. Come on, you all! We'll